Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Obama urges world leaders to join in fight against Islamic State. And Obama says to the IS, leave the battlefield while you can. I'm Bob Doty, reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging world leaders to join him in efforts to degrade and destroy the Islamic State. In an address Wednesday to the U.N. General Assembly in New York, Mr. Obama said that group has terrorized innocent people in Iraq and Syria with beheadings, by gunning down children, dumping bodies in mass graves, and starving religious minorities. The U.S. president called on the world and especially Muslim communities to forcefully reject the ideology of the Islamic State and al-Qaeda. He said the cancer of violent extremism must end. Mr. Obama also denounced Russian aggression in the crisis in Ukraine, saying Russia is challenging post-war order.
America and our allies will support the people of Ukraine as they develop their democracy and economy. We will reinforce our NATO allies and uphold our commitment to collective self-defense. We will impose a cost on Russia for aggression, and we will counter falsehoods with the truth. And we call upon others to join us on the right side of history. For while small gains can be won at the barrel of a gun, they will ultimately be turned back if enough voices support the freedom of nations and peoples to make their own decisions.
In addition, President Obama called for a broader world effort to contain the outbreak of the Ebola virus that has killed thousands of people in West Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging Islamic State fighters to leave the battlefield while you can, hours after the government launched a second round of airstrikes against the militant group in Syria. Speaking to the United Nations General Assembly in New York, the president blamed sectarian conflicts around the world for creating a fertile recruiting ground. This is VOA News. Earlier in the opening session, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on world leaders to have a frank discussion about the causes of extremism in the region. In the past week, the Islamic State offensive in northern Syria has displaced more than 130,000 civilians. A Jordanian court has acquitted radical preacher Abu Qatada on charges related to a plot to attack tourists during New Year's celebrations in 2000. The court ruled Wednesday there was not enough evidence against him, and he was later released. In June, the preacher was acquitted in a separate case, which involved charges of conspiring to carry out a terror attack on an American school in Amman. India has successfully placed a satellite into orbit around Mars, putting the nation into an elite club of deep space explorers that so far includes the United States, Russia, and Europe. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced the success of the Mars Orbiter mission Wednesday, alongside scientists with the Indian Space Research Organization at their command center in the southern city of Bangalore. The success of the Mars Orbiter mission marks a milestone for India's five-decades-old space program. Western powers are criticizing China's decision to sentence a well-known Uyghur scholar to life in prison on charges of separatism. A court in the western region of Xinjiang on Tuesday handed the life sentence to Ilham Toti, an economics professor who disagreed with China's treatment of minority Uyghurs. Toti's sentence was seen as especially harsh since the scholar was viewed as a moderate within the Uyghur community who had consistently but peacefully pushed for equal rights for the mostly Muslim ethnic group. Japan has announced additional sanctions on Russia over unrest in Ukraine and urged Moscow to find a peaceful resolution to the crisis. Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga says the new sanctions will tighten restrictions on arms exports to Russia, as well as ban some Russian banks from issuing securities in Japan. Japan has already issued two sets of sanctions on Russia this year, but the latest restrictive measures bring it in line with those laid out by the United States and the European Union in recent weeks. And U.S. sales of newly built homes surged 18% in August. Wednesday's report from the Commerce Department says if sales continued at that pace for a year, 500,000 homes would get new owners. It is the fastest rate of new home sales since 2008 and a hopeful sign of recovery in a housing market that has seen a mix of positive and negative reports in recent months. New sales homes are about one-tenth of the housing market that is dominated by sales. I'm Bob Doty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The only language understood by killers like this is the language of force. Those who have joined ISIL should leave the battlefield while they can.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama delivering a speech at the U.N. General Assembly. Details next.
Also in the news, Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria who fled into Cameroon.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Algeria, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour: in an address to the United Nations General Assembly today, U.S. President Barack Obama emphasized the United States' commitment to problem-solving through coalition building. He said the international body must recommit to collective action as a means of solving such problems as climate change, but in particular, terrorism. He said member states must take action against what he called religiously motivated fanatics. Mr. Obama said the world must meet the challenge with a focus on four areas, the first being the destruction of ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State.
The only language understood by killers like this is the language of force. So the United States of America will work with a broad coalition to dismantle this network of death. In this effort, we do not act alone. Nor do we intend to send U.S. troops to occupy foreign lands. Instead, we will support Iraqis and Syrians fighting to reclaim their communities. We will use our military might in a campaign of airstrikes to roll back ISIL. We will train and equip forces fighting against these terrorists on the ground. We will work to cut off their financing and to stop the flow of fighters into and out of the region. And already over 40 nations have offered to join this coalition. Today I ask the world to join in this effort. Those who have joined ISIL should leave the battlefield while they can.
He says the second challenge, and especially for Muslim communities, is to reject the ideology of ISIL and Al-Qaeda. He says no child is born hating, and it's time for a new compact of civilized peoples to end hate from influencing young minds. That means an end to tolerance for clerics who call on people to harm innocents of any faith, Muslims, Jews, and Christians. It's also time, he said, to end the funding that fuels terrorism. That includes financial support from those who benefit from the global economy, but then siphon the funds to teach children to tear it down. He said the ideology of ISIL, Al-Qaeda, or Boko Haram will die if confronted and refuted by the light of day.
Look at the new forum for promoting peace in Muslim societies. Sheikh Bin Bayad described its purpose. We must declare war on war so the outcome will be peace upon peace. Look at the young British Muslims who responded to terrorist propaganda by starting the Not In My Name campaign, declaring ISIS is hiding behind a false Islam. Look at the Christian and Muslim leaders who came together in the Central African Republic to reject violence. Listen to the imam who said, politics try to divide the religious in our country, but religion shouldn't be a cause of hate, war, or strife. Later today, the Security Council will adopt a resolution that underscores the responsibility of states to counter violent extremism. But resolutions must be followed by tangible commitments, so we're accountable when we fall short. Next year, we should all be prepared to announce the concrete steps that we have taken to counter extremist ideologies in our own countries. By getting intolerance out of schools, stopping radicalization before it spreads, and promoting institutions and programs that build new bridges of understanding.
He said the cycle of sectarian conflict must be ended. He said conflict within religions is not unusual and that Christianity had years of conflict.
Today, it is violence within Muslim communities that has become the source of so much human misery. It is time to acknowledge the destruction wrought by proxy wars and terror campaigns between Sunni and Shia across the Middle East. And it is time that political, civic, and religious leaders reject sectarian strife.
President Obama also said countries of the Arab and Muslim world must focus on the extraordinary potential of their people, particularly their youth.
Here I'd like to speak directly to young people across the Muslim world. You come from a great tradition that stands for education, not ignorance, innovation, not destruction, the dignity of life, not murder. Those who call you away from this path are betraying this tradition, not defending it. You have demonstrated that when young people have the tools to succeed, good schools, education in math and science, an economy that nurtures creativity and entrepreneurship, then societies will flourish. So America will partner with those that promote that vision. Where women are full participants in a country's politics or economy, societies are more likely to succeed. And that's why we support the participation of women in parliaments and peace processes, schools, and the economy. If young people live in places where the only option is between the dictates of a state or the lure of an extremist underground, then no counterterrorism strategy can succeed.
President Obama cited as an example of progress Tunisia, where secular and Islamist parties worked together to produce a new constitution, and Senegal, where civil society thrives alongside a strong democratic government. He said the United States will never shy away from defending its interest, nor will it shrink from the promise of the United Nations and its Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It includes the notion, he said, that peace is not merely the absence of war, but the presence of a better life.
The Guinean government says it is sending 2,000 young people into communities to go door-to-door teaching families about Ebola. The initiative comes after the brutal killings of 8 people as they traveled in the southeast as part of a government convoy to raise awareness about the virus. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry on how the government is modifying its strategy in light of the killings.
Guinea's government says what happened in the village of Wome last week must not happen again. Locals launched a deadly attack on a government convoy traveling in the southeast on Ebola, killing a total of 8 health workers and journalists. Government spokesperson Albert Damantan Kamara tells VOA 20 people have been arrested and the investigation continues. He also says they are making some changes in their Ebola strategy.
Ce qui s'est passé à Wome donc est vraiment inédit et surprenant. Quand cela ne tienne,
Kamara says what happened in Wome goes beyond description and comes as a surprise. He says they are reinforcing security around the awareness campaign teams to make them properly secured. He says security forces will be deployed in all areas where Ebola is being treated. He notes security forces will not be quarantining any areas. This mission will be to protect health workers. He did not specify the number of soldiers and police. Local organizations are calling upon government to intensify its Ebola awareness campaign. Churches and mosques around the country have joined in on the education effort at the request of the government. Yet resistance and hostility to health workers still exist, particularly in the southeast, where this regional outbreak is believed to have started in December. The Minister of Youth is training 2,100 young people to embark on a nationwide door-to-door awareness campaign next week.
Ces jeunes feront de porte à porte, ils auront des kits
des kids pour montrer aux
femmes. The Minister of Youth, Mustapha Naite, says these young people will be giving out materials to enable family members know how to protect themselves from Ebola. He says to gather statistics on what happens on the ground to enable us know which homes we have visited and where volunteers face resistance and refusals. His announcement comes just days after Sierra Leone completed a similar exercise. Health authorities said the three-day campaign was a success and more than 1 million homes were visited. Naite says unlike Sierra Leone, Guinea is not ordering people to stay confined to their homes. Ebola has killed more than 600 people in Guinea and more than 2,800 across the region overall. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
Coming up on 16 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. While efforts continue to contain the Ebola outbreak among people in West Africa, researchers have a new technique to study Ebola among the great apes. Thousands of the primates are believed to have died from the disease in recent decades. The research could help predict where Ebola outbreaks might occur among humans. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Researchers have been studying Ebola in the wild for 30 years, but they say there's still much they do not know. It's difficult to safely capture wild animals in Africa's rainforests, let alone take blood and tissue samples from them. Dr. Kenneth Cameron is a Wildlife Conservation Society field veterinarian who took part in the research. He spoke from the Republic of Congo capital, Brazzaville.
We've been doing Ebola ecology studies for a long period of time, trying to further determine where Ebola comes from, how it spills over from presumed reservoir species to great apes in particular, and what effect it has specifically on those great ape populations. We know that it has some pretty devastating effects on great ape populations. We believe well in excess of 80% mortality when there is an Ebola epizootic amongst great apes.
An epizootic is an epidemic among animals. In the current West Africa Ebola outbreak, fruit bats are the prime suspect for being the source of the virus. Fruit bats are known as reservoir species. That is, they can carry the Ebola virus and yet not get sick. Cameron says it's not the same with great apes.
We believe that Ebola virus has killed probably tens of thousands of great apes in the past 20 to 30 years in Central Africa. So it's those populations that we're concerned about. And what we wanted to find out is what individuals amongst those species or what populations of gorillas and chimpanzees have actually been exposed to Ebola virus.
Researchers believe great apes can become infected by being in close quarters with other animals that have similar feeding habits, animals that may carry the virus.
They'll be eating out of the same tree at the same time, for example. We typically call those trees magnet trees because when a magnet tree starts fruiting, for example, a ficus tree, the figs that are produced attract all kinds of animals, so many different species, including both the reservoirs and the susceptible hosts for Ebola virus, that is to say the fruit bats and gorillas and chimps.
Infected bats may contaminate the tree's fruit with their saliva and spread the virus through urine and feces on the ground. Researchers say that understanding Ebola's distribution in space and time is a matter of great importance to both human health and conservation communities. So what is the new technique to study Ebola among great apes? The answer, studying fecal samples. That's right, primate droppings.
What we're looking for is just feces, fresh feces that have been dropped by great apes. Great apes move around feeding and whatnot throughout the day. They obviously drop their feces as they go. We typically send teams out in what we call directed reconnaissance walk surveys. So it's just a survey where they go and they just wander through the forest in areas where we know there are great apes looking for the feces, or they use GPS coordinates, compass coordinates, to direct themselves from one point to the next, looking for feces as they go.
Depending how fresh it is, it's considered fresh if it's 12 to 24 hours old. The fecal sample is frozen and sent for testing back in the United States.
Unfortunately, we're not set up to be running the testing here in country. Our partners in developing this technique at the National Institutes of Health would run them in their laboratory. So usually from the time of collection to the time of testing to know whether or not they had been exposed is usually weeks. We're hoping to transfer that technology to our laboratory here in Brazzaville in the Republic of Congo, where we can do the testing on a much more timely basis.
Apes are like humans in that they develop antibodies during a viral infection. It's not known how long those antibodies remain in apes that survive infection or whether they can protect an ape from future outbreaks, but the samples may help predict potential Ebola hot zones.
A lot of disease projections, where diseases may erupt, comes out of mathematical epidemiological models that are conducted. We need more data to feed into these models. If we don't have good data fed into them, the results that we get out are not going to be meaningful. The data that we're collecting here can feed into those mathematical models. It can help us predict where Ebola may occur next by determining which great apes have already been infected, so we know Ebola has been in a given region.
The Wildlife Conservation Society field veterinarian says typically in Central Africa, human Ebola outbreaks follow epizootic outbreaks. Contaminated bushmeat is usually to blame. Cameron says when researchers found evidence of Ebola among dead great apes, they educated local communities about the disease and asked them to report any wildlife carcasses they found so they could be examined for Ebola. Health officials were also notified. Studying fecal samples could create a better early warning system. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In an address to the United Nations General Assembly today, U.S. President Barack Obama emphasized the United States' commitment to problem-solving. And Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria who fled into Cameroon. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
A new report highlights effective interventions seeking an end to child marriage, a harmful practice that turns 15 million girls worldwide into child brides every year. The International Center for Research on Women launched the report in Washington and hosted a panel discussion that included international NGOs and humanitarian agencies. The groups explored successful programs in Bangladesh, Egypt, Ethiopia, and India that focused on empowering girls, preventing child marriage, and mitigating its harmful effects when it does occur. Child marriage is also a topic of discussion at the 2014 UN General Assembly, now meeting in New York City. Anne Warner is the Senior Gender and Youth Specialist for the International Center for Research on Women. She emphasized the importance of keeping child marriage at the forefront of international agendas.
Child marriage is a practice that affects about 15 million girls every year. That's 15 million girls whose human rights are violated when they are forced into marriage. Not only are those individual girls' lives compromised, their health, their futures, their aspirations, and their well-being, but that also has really profound implications for the health of their families, their future children, and the communities. So we know that child marriage not only affects individuals, but it has implications for social, economic, and political development, because when girls are married as children, they're less equipped to participate fully in the economic and social life of their communities.
You launched a report this month, a recent report that highlights ways to prevent and end child marriage. What are some of these ways that you all have put together?
What we looked at in this report was a few programs that are working with girls themselves. So girls either who are at risk of being married as children or girls who are already married. And these programs work with girls, usually in group settings, and provide them with a variety of information, skills, and social support. And what we found is that these kinds of activities for girls really do help them a lot. First of all, they help transform girls' views of themselves and what they are capable of. And they also help to transform other people's views and their homes and their communities of what they are capable of. And then they also introduce alternatives and other opportunities for girls, such as going back to school or staying in school or seeking economic opportunities like small income generating activities or doing savings and loans with their peers. So those three pathways, the self-transformation, the transformation of how others see them, and these alternatives and additional opportunities, we found can really improve girls' capabilities to make and act on strategic life choices.
It seems like this is also a way to empower girls as well, especially those in developing countries. Because of culture, they don't really have a choice in some matters.
These are situations where poverty plays a huge role in the choices that girls have for themselves and that their families have for them. We know that parents everywhere want the best for their children. They want them to be educated and to be happy, but in contexts where there are few alternatives for girls, extra support is often required to equip girls with this information, with new skills, and with social support, and also to support and engage parents in the process of helping to support their daughters and their sons in a different pathway.
How does a girl overcome the trauma of being married at a very, very young age?
This is something that is extremely important and something that we need to understand better. We need more research on the mental health consequences of child marriage. It really ranges widely depending on the age at which a girl is married and the circumstances of her marriage. Everybody is an individual and has individual experiences, but we do know that when girls are pulled out of school and deprived of their opportunities to really live out their dreams, that that has an important toll on their lives. We've also, though, met a lot of amazing young women, either who are currently married or who, as children, or who were married as child brides, who are really doing an incredible amount to transform their lives and those of their children.
There was a session at the UN General Assembly that focused on early child marriage and ending it. What came out of this session? I know that you all were a part of this.
There's fortunately been a lot of attention to child marriage at the UN General Assembly, including some events hosted by ICRW and other partners. And our goal is to make sure that ending child marriage is a priority in the next set of development goals that are being shaped right now.
Anne Warner is the Senior Gender and Youth Specialist for the International Center for Research on Women. She spoke with me from Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhiv in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on the Voice of America.
Advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. seek health care immediately because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. In an address to the United Nations General Assembly today, U.S. President Barack Obama emphasized the United States' commitment to problem-solving through coalition building. And Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria who fled into Cameroon. Coming up, we have music from Algeria, and in our feature segment, Ivory Coast announces measures aimed at keeping the country Ebola-free. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehaya Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is African News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're beginning today with African Athletics.
Kim, our starting line on the Sunny Side of Sports is African Athletics. Some of the continent's top distance runners are training for three upcoming big city marathons, one in Germany and two here in the United States. First up is the Berlin Marathon on Sunday in the German capital. And this Voice of America programming note, the energetic Andy Edwards will be providing us with coverage from Berlin. Then we have the Chicago Marathon on October 12th here in the USA and the New York City Marathon on November 2nd. Berlin, Chicago, and New York are part of the World Marathon Majors, also known as the Big Six, a lucrative championship-style series of races that started in 2006. The three other races in the series are the Tokyo Marathon in February and the Boston Marathon and London Marathon, which are held in April. At the end of each World Marathon Major Series, the leading man and woman each receive $500,000. Now, runners from neighboring Kenya and Ethiopia have dominated the series since it began. The two most recent winners of that big jackpot were Segaye Kebede of Ethiopia and Priska Jeptu of Kenya. Jeptu will be defending her women's title at the New York City Marathon in early November, while Segaye is one of the favorites in Sunday's Berlin Marathon.
I feel good!
Right now, you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young, so check it out.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your heart... Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you later Wednesday night at 18:30 UTC with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. Joining us once again from Johannesburg is our African football guru, David Legg. Good evening, David.
Good evening, Sunny, and good evening to all the football lovers around the continent.
David, let's turn our attention to Europe. Any recent highlights involving African players?
Yes, Sunny, great news. Plenty of African goals in the English Premier League, among others. The highlights? Pape Sissé. He's been out since April with a broken kneecap. He came off the bench for Newcastle when they were trailing Hull by 2-0, and he scored twice to snatch a 2-2 draw for Newcastle. So a big high five there to Pape Sissé, the Senegalese striker for Newcastle United. Another Senegalese on target was Mohamed Diame of Hull in the same match. He scored a second Hull goal before Sissé rescued Newcastle. Great news for all our Kenyan listeners. Victor Wanyama of Southampton, he scored a lone goal, which gave Southampton the victory at Swansea City. Another African goal in the EPL came from Yannick Bolasie. He was born in France, but he plays for the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the reason for that is his parents hail from Africa. And he scored one of the goals as Crystal Palace shocked Everton 3-2. Moving on to Spain, and Stefan Mbia, the new captain of the very impressive Cameroon side that has started the Nations Cup with wins over DR Congo and Ivory Coast. He scored for the second consecutive match for Seville. They won 3-1 at Cordoba. No African goals, unfortunately, in Italy, but there were some in Germany in the Bundesliga. And among those was Chopo Moting, the Cameroonian striker. He scored for Schalke. Interesting match this, Sonny. Nine-man Schalke fought back to draw 2-2 with 10-man Eintracht Frankfurt. So rather busy referee in that game. And yes, Sonny, that's a wrap-up of the African scorers in some of the major European leagues.
One of those major European leagues, David, the English Premier League, some interesting dynamics in a clash between Manchester City, the defending champion, and the Blues of Chelsea, currently on top of the table. A longtime former member of Chelsea comes back to haunt the Blues. VOA! Tell our VOA football fans about that.
Yeah, bizarre, Sonny. Frank Lampard, he leaves Chelsea to play in the Major League Soccer in the United States. Voice of America! But the season is not ready yet for Lampard, so he's pushed back to Manchester City, who own the American club, just to give him some practice. Well, Chelsea wishes that that practice didn't come against them at the weekend, because up stepped Mr. Lampard with 5 minutes left to equalize, and that ended Sonny Chelsea's 100% record at the early stages of the season. Nevertheless, not a bad result, Sonny, for Chelsea, away to the league title holders, a one-all draw. Another interesting match, Sonny. You know my love of Manchester United. Leicester City 5, Manchester United 3. I could carry on repeating that result for the next hour, but obviously your show needs to go on with other issues. Suffice to say, Sonny, that United led 2-0 and they led 3-1. And they must have thought, well, these are 3 points in the bag, because after a poor start to the season, they beat QPR 4-0. But lo and behold, Leicester, just promoted, and not really what you would say one of the giants of English football by any stretch of the imagination, hit the United defence for 4 goals, 2 of them from the penalty spot, and one, I must say, very controversial indeed. Other interesting results, Arsenal winning 3-0 at Aston Villa. That was the end of Villa's unbeaten record. We've already mentioned Newcastle coming from 2 goals behind to draw with Hull. West Ham, in fairness, my team, also taking a hammering. West Ham 3, Liverpool 1. Not a great start to the season by Liverpool. And if we look at the table, Sonny, Chelsea out on top with 13 points. Southampton and Aston Villa, not two clubs you'd expect to be sharing second place, but that's what they're doing with 10 each. Arsenal, one of the sides that you do expect to be up there at the top, they've got 9 points. Then we go down to 6th place, Manchester City. They've got 8 points. I go down to 9th place and I find Tottenham Hotspur with 7 points. I then go down to 11th place and I find my beloved Liverpool, which has 6 points from 5 games. But even below them, Sonny, you've got Manchester United 12th on the table. 5 games played, only 1 victory, 2 draws, 2 losses, and just 5 points. And a team that I feel have not played well so far this season are Everton. They were challenging for the Champions League top 4 places last year. But they're also battling, 5 games played and just 5 points. And then right at the bottom, you've got QPR with 4 points, Burnley with 3, and rank bottom, Newcastle, also with 3 points.
Thanks, David. That's our football guru, David Legg. Still with the English Premier League, we have a new EPL question of the week at my Facebook page. VOA's Downtown Brown takes a look at the answers, and then he reads his favorite responses out on Friday's Sunny Side of Sports. This week's question, Chelsea striker Diego Costa holds the record for most goals with 7 in his first 4 EPL matches. Do you think Costa will top the 27 league goals he scored for Spain's Atletico Madrid last season? VOA! I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. Voice of America! Daybreak Africa sportsman Marco Uma has more African football news for us now.
Guinea will host Ghana at a neutral venue in the Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier next month, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, ruled. CAF has maintained a ban on football matches in the Mano River region, which include Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, as a measure towards containing the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. In women's football, Nigeria's Super Falcons is Africa's highest-placed women's football team, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland. Nigeria is 35th, Ghana 50th, Cameroon 51st, while African champions Equatorial Guinea are 55th. South Africa is 56th, Ivory Coast 64th, Algeria 75th, Morocco 77th, Tunisia 78th, Egypt 87th, and Senegal 89th. Finally, South Africa hosts Ivory Coast in Moruleng in Northwest Province in a friendly match today, Wednesday. Both teams are gearing up for the Telkom Namibia African Women's Championships due in Windhoek, Namibia next month. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Thanks, Mark. And you can hear Mark's reports Monday through Friday on our Daybreak Africa radio show. Finally, the Sunny Side of Sports remembers former National Basketball Association player Caldwell Jones, who died Sunday of a heart attack at age 64. Tall and skinny, Caldwell was one of 4 Jones brothers, along with Will, Major, and Charles, to play in the NBA. Caldwell was a member of some excellent Philadelphia 76ers teams in the late 1970s and early 1980s that also included Hall of Fame player Julius Dr. J. Irving. In one of my favorite Caldwell Jones anecdotes, which I shared at our morning staff meeting on Wednesday, a newspaper reporter asked Caldwell, "What's your favorite seafood?" Caldwell responded, "Saltwater taffy." I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, Ivory Coast announcing measures aimed at keeping the country Ebola-free. And next, disgruntled South Sudan students pursuing education in Kenya. But first, the music. Here is Idir and Nadia of Algeria with Amon Per.
Protéger notre liberté. survie. Mon patrimoine, c'est pour toi, citoyenne. Que je m'élève, c'est pour toi que je t'ai. Mes sentiments par amour, pour ma foi et mon enfant.
Face à ton destin, n'oublie jamais que le respect sera toujours comme la racine de notre famille. Tu es ma fille.
À mon père, j'ai à dire tellement de choses. À mon père, cet homme libre, loin de sa terre. À mon père, qui sans lire et sans écrire a su faire de sa vie mon devenir.
C'est par toi que survit mon patrimoine, c'est par toi. Citoyenne, que je m'élève, c'est pour toi que je t'ai. Mes sentiments par amour, pour ma foi et mon enfant.
Tu sais, ben, il y a des choses entre une fille et son père qui ne se disent pas chez nous. Mais une chose est sûre, c'est que tu m'as toujours dit de respecter les autres et de travailler dur, dur pour aller toujours plus loin, toujours plus haut. Et tu m'as rendue citoyenne du monde.
Parce que Ziram se veut d'être l'homme libre, tu porteras ce nom comme on porte le destin. C'est un peu de moi, même si je ne te le dis pas. Je suis entre tes mains comme l'eau sacrée d'un pays. Citoyenne de ce monde, ta vie sera ma vie.
Mon patrimoine, c'est pour toi, citoyenne, que je m'élève, c'est pour toi que je t'ai. Mes sentiments par amour, pour ma foi et mon enfant.
À mon père, j'ai à dire tellement de choses. À mon père, cet homme libre, loin de sa terre, qui sans lire et sans écrire a su faire de sa vie mon devenir.
C'est par toi que survit mon patrimoine, c'est pour toi, citoyenne. Que je m'élève, c'est pour toi que je t'ai. Mes sentiments par amour, pour ma foi et mon enfant.
À mon père, j'ai à dire tellement de choses. À mon père, cet homme libre, loin de sa terre. À mon père.
Idir and Nadia of Algeria with Mon Père.
Well, so far, the Ebola virus has killed more than 2,500 people in four countries in West Africa. Other countries are taking precautions. The national airline of Ivory Coast has stopped serving neighboring Ebola countries. The move, while controversial in the global health community, is part of a whole slew of measures Ivory Coast announced recently that are aimed at keeping the country Ebola-free. VOA West Africa correspondent Anne Look has more about how this country is keeping its guard up.
As Nigeria continues to report new Ebola cases stemming from that infected traveler from Liberia who arrived at the Lagos airport in late July, other countries are getting their guard up. In Ivory Coast, the government says until further notice, Air Côte d'Ivoire will not be flying routes from affected countries to Abidjan. The government has also banned all carriers servicing the country from transporting passengers from Ebola-affected countries to Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast has not reported any cases of Ebola. Government spokesman Bruno Kone said they want to keep it that way.
Donc, il faut absolument maintenir cette vigilance au niveau du gouvernement, mais également.
He says other countries have already had cases of possible contamination via air travel. He says if that can happen to Nigeria, which is further away from the outbreak's epicenter than they are, what would make Ivory Coast think that a sick person could not get on a plane in Monrovia or Freetown and get off in Abidjan? The government says in addition to the ban on travelers from those areas, authorities at the Abidjan airport will be screening all arriving passengers for fever using infrared thermometer devices. Fever can be one of the early symptoms of Ebola. Once symptoms appear, a person is contagious. Other people can catch the disease by coming into close contact with that sick person's bodily fluids. But it can take up to 21 days for symptoms to appear, which in theory would make it possible for an infected but seemingly healthy person to board a plane and enter another country. But the threat is not only from the air. Ivory Coast shares land borders with two of the four affected countries, Liberia and Guinea. Ivory Coast Health Minister Dr. Raymond Goudou Kofi said it does not make sense to shut those borders.
Vous avez dit que nous avons des pistes
qui ne sont pas légales, nos frontières sont poreuses.
She says the borders are very porous and there is a lot of movement back and forth. She says even if they close the official borders, people know other ways across. She says instead they have worked on educating villages and local leaders to get them to refer new arrivals to health authorities. Liberia has shut its land border with Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast's defense minister said in recent days, border authorities have already repatriated nearly 100 people who have tried to cross illegally from Guinea or Liberia. The Ivory Coast government says it continues to train health workers and will be holding a simulation drill later this week for first responders to see how they handle a pretend suspected case. The health minister is advising citizens to take standard preventative measures. She says people should stop eating bushmeat and start washing their hands often. She also advised people to stop shaking hands or hugging people. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
South Sudan students studying in Kenya are angry because those studying in Uganda are the only ones receiving student aid from Juba. The students in Kenya feel the aid is justified and they think other students pursuing education in other countries should receive government financial assistance as well. VOA's Lucy Pony and Michael Atit spoke to some of the disgruntled students in Kenya and filed this report.
South Sudanese students at universities in Kenya think they deserve the same treatment as their colleagues in Uganda. Ajak John Ateny is a student representative from the Kenyan Daystar University in Nairobi.
But we are not bad kids. We are good kids. We are kids from the same father. And we should be actually given, we should be given the same opportunity and the same help that the students from Uganda they have received. We students from Kenya, we are not actually happy, but it's not the way that those students, we are not supposed to be helped. But we should also get the upper hand, like the way we are actually getting all those benefits.
John says most of the challenges the students face are a direct result of the conflict in South Sudan. He says a majority of students used to get financial aid from the government in Juba. But for the past 2 years, students in Kenya have not received any government funds, and things have gotten worse since December when the conflict began.
It has happened in the country. It has affected them, especially and economically. When I say economically, most of the students who are in school, they have lost parents. They were paying the school fees for them, and they were not able to actually pay for themselves, so they were not able to graduate. Also, especially, most of them, they have trauma, you know. They are not able to support themselves financially.
Hakim Ngando, a master's student at Kenyan Daystar, is one of the students who did not sit for final exams last semester. He says that is because he did not get the money he needed to pay his school fees. He says the government's decision to offer help to students in Uganda only is ill-advised. He says educational support should be fairly distributed.
The president knows that after the problem happened in December, every South Sudanese student, whether it's in Kampala or in Nairobi or anywhere, is funded with their fees, to pay the fees. So actually, in this, some people do not manage to sit for exam, including me. So it was a very difficult situation. And we hope that if the government started the initiative of helping everyone, they could have sent money then to Uganda and to Nairobi and wherever, the Ethiopia, wherever the South Sudanese are.
Ben Chengeng, a third-year student of education at the University of Bahr El Ghazal in Wau, says students in South Sudan face even more challenges as those studying outside the country. Geng says the government should make the needs of students inside the country a top priority.
Why you go and sit while you go and pay students who are in abroad, leaving those who are studying home? Then that there is a problem to start to begin at home. Whenever he wants to begin, then let him begin by providing that charity at home. He is studying here at home. Later then he goes out.
Genge says he cannot remember the government ever offering financial aid to students at his university since he began studying there 2 years ago. Lucy Pony reporting for VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday to Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Ihis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopez, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Calling for a global response to meet what has become a global threat, President Barack Obama announced that the United States will soon send 3,000 military personnel and stepped-up medical aid to lead in a major expansion of an international campaign to stem the deadly Ebola outbreak ravaging several countries in West Africa. The disease, spread through contact with bodily fluids of the infected, has killed more than 2,600 people, mostly in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Considerable personnel resources and expertise have been marshaled to date, but the virus's spread continues to increase. Countermeasures, such as isolating the sick and tracking contacts of those infected, have been hard to establish in countries where Ebola was unknown until this outbreak. The sheer numbers of people now contracting the disease adds to the difficulty. Beyond the human health toll, normal economic activity has been disrupted, as have trade and travel. Confronting this threat is a top U.S. priority, the president said, and we will work with the United Nations and other international partners to help the affected and threatened in Liberia, Sierra Leone, as well as in countries to which the infection might spread. A U.S. military command will be set up in Liberia to support local and multinational efforts across the region. U.S. forces will aid in the movement and coordination of sanitation kits and other medical supplies and provide a field hospital and training center. The U.S. Agency for International Development will be providing at least 1,000 beds for Ebola treatment. Other countries are also now stepping up their response efforts. Our four-part strategy, which will engage the whole of the United States government, is aimed at controlling the epidemic in West Africa, mitigating related economic and social problems in the region, engaging the international community in a coordinated response, and helping countries prevent such outbreaks from occurring again or respond to them quickly if they do.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.